the great Jay Mariotti, who comes on every Wednesday night, of course, with me, and he's on the phones right now. I'll get to him here in just a second. I just remind you that if you got a question, a concern, a comment, a suggestion for Jay, you can send it, of course, to talktodino@gmail.com. That's talktodino@gmail.com. So without any further ado, as we crack open hour number two, it is the aforementioned Jay Mariotti. He is back on the Dino Costa Show from his home in California on this Wednesday evening. Mr. Mariotti, how are you?
So I can't start the show with... You don't want me to start like
my
that.
My goodness. He went on a rant today about... Listen, here's his logic today. You ready for this, Jack? He goes on this rant... You know what? Do I have it? Do I still have it up? I don't have it up. I would play... I'll look for it. I'll get it before our conversation is done. But in essence, what he did today was he went on the most inauthentic, most unoriginal, phony rant about in the baseball crisis, the labor crisis that we have right now, because Bryce Harper tweeted that he wanted to get back to work and said, tell us when and where. Other players have done this. Bryce Harper did it and Trevor Bauer did it. But he singled out basically Bryce Harper and he said, I can't take Bryce Harper going to Twitter and telling me how much he wants to play, because based on the dollars that he was paid last year and the underwhelming year that he had, Bryce Harper should sit down, shut up, and his voice shouldn't be heard. You believe the way this...
You know, Russo works for the owners, and Sirius XM has a deal with baseball. So it's not hard to do that equation. I told you a couple of weeks ago he went on a rant, a pro-owners rant. Chris is in the wrong boat this time, Dino. America, for once, seems to be on the side of athletes in a labor skirmish, and it's because Rob Manfred made the mistake last week of saying... 100% we will have a deal. Well, a week later, we don't have a deal. There was a flicker of light today. And now the union, of course, is saying there's no deal. And you know, we're so sick of the back and forth. But Russo is one of these people we talk about all the time on the show. He's a politician. He's not a fair-minded, down-the-middle, independent guy. He knows who pays his salary. The owners of baseball. That's why he does a show on the MLB network.
Yeah.
Too many people in the media like that. Baseball writers, certain writers are that way. They're in the pockets of the owners. But as I said, this time around, Dino, the owners are the ones getting killed.
Well, we'll get to the baseball thing, but I want to jump into the NBA thing here with you real quick and get your thoughts on what's going on. So they're going to go down there. They're going to go down to Orlando. They're going to start the season. And they came out with this, I don't know what it was, an 80-some-odd page list of advisories for the players and the staff and the referees and all these people. And essentially what it is, when I got done reading it, Jay, if I'm a player, right, in the NBA, I want no... Forget about me even thinking that I might get a virus, okay? Just based upon the way that I'm going to be expected to live for the next couple of months, I'm sorry. I'll see you guys next season. I'm not opting in. I'm opting out.
Yeah, I don't understand this. I haven't from day one. It's a military lockdown camp. It's not a bubble. It's not a campus.
Good way to put
it. These guys are not allowed to leave their rooms, essentially. They are there to take showers before games, after games. They are to dress in their rooms. They can't have contact with anybody. When their families do show up, the families will be in a room somewhere else. They will have, apparently, activities within this campus. You can golf, you can swim, and so on. But they're going to actually, make these guys wear these bracelets. And if you're within 6 feet of somebody, it goes off. Can you imagine these millennial Gen X basketball players, millionaires, who don't take no for an answer? If they want to go out on the town in Orlando, and that would, I believe, entail strip joints, because there's nothing else to do there. It's either Mickey Mouse or a strip joint. You mean to tell me somebody's going to actually stop them? And I kept reading this thing as you did. And I had to stop at the point where they were encouraging watchdogs and snitches to call an anonymous phone number in case they see somebody going out. So if LeBron James wants to go out in the town one night, somebody from another team is actually going to snitch on LeBron James? Or better, how do we know if somebody's not going to make up a story that LeBron or Giannis or Kawhi, they're out in the town somewhere? This is it's becoming comedy now, and the thing is, there's nothing funny about any of this.
Jay, I hope, listen, as much as
pandemic, we're in the state of Florida, the the positive test rates are soaring by the day, and yet they're inviting these guys to come on down and play basketball.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. We're going to have outbreaks. We're going to have players leaving in the middle. They're going to get sick of it. And eventually, I think they're going to have to call the whole thing off.
Listen, as much as I want no part of it, I wouldn't want any part of it as a player. I doubt I'm going to want too much of it as a fan. You know, boredom might come in, might kick in, and I might, you know, watch a few games here and there. But I want them to go forward with this, Jay, for exactly the reasons that you're saying. This is going to be an unmitigated train wreck. It is going to be a comedy thing, but at the end of the day, this is going to be such a colossal fuck up that the NBA is going to have egg on their face for years after they introduce this thing. It is going to be terrible. And again, as a player, as you, I think you put it a great way. It's like a military lockup, man. I mean, it's incredible. You can't shower after the game. You got to shower before the game in your hotel room. Then you walk in with your uniform. You shower after the game. You can't shower in the showers. You got to go back to the hotel room, right? You've got the bracelets, like you say. You've got a toll-free snitch number. I mean, I want this thing to go forward because I want to see how comical it's going to be.
Well, when I was reading it, and what is it, 113?
Yeah, 113 pages, yeah.
You know what I've started to feel? The NBA is in a world of hurt right now because, face it, you know, the reason they're coming back, they're not doing it to showcase Black Lives Matter. They're not coming back for the good of America. They're coming back because there's more than $1 billion in potential losses to try to recoup. And on top of that, unlike some of these other leagues, the NBA has an unsteady future. 2021, Dino, they make so much money off game night revenues, 40%. And if you don't have fans in the stands starting in November or December, that by the way, the 2021 season is coming up. You know how bizarre that sounds? But, yeah, it's only a few months away where we're talking about next season. And if you think about this, if you're not going to have spectators in the stands and they're taking a 40% hit, then what's going to happen? You're going to have the league enforce the act of God clause called force majeure.
Right.
And that's going to become the worst sports term since androstenedione. It is, because we're going to be hearing it constantly across the board in sports. Force majeure. And mark my words, the NBA owners will indeed invoke that clause so that they can tear up the collective bargaining agreement. And here we go, the possibility of a lockout in basketball, in addition to baseball. So that's why everybody is desperate here. Adam Silver, a very smart guy, desperate man. ESPN with Clay Travis reporting the other day that they are at all-time lows, Dino, in ratings.
Yeah.
Back in the tractor pull days of 1980, they had higher ratings than they do at this point. A lot of that, of course, is, you know, fragmentation and so on. But still, ESPN has its worst ratings ever. So they are desperate to get this off the ground. That's why Bob Iger brought them to Disney World. But the coronavirus is bigger than any of this, Dino, and if we indeed have an outbreak or we have players running around on the town and buzzers going off and snitches and so on, is anybody going to be focusing on the basketball games?
Well,
and let me say this, too. If anybody does test positive, and you will have scads of positive tests, believe me, if a star player has a positive test, he has to sit out a minimum of 14 days.
Right.
So if you're in the middle of a postseason series, your team is screwed the minute you have a prominent player test positive for the coronavirus. So I have no idea why they're doing this other than the obvious reason, a billion plus.
Well, you know, you're right about that. You've made nothing but good points about the whole thing once they get this thing, you know, kicked off and started. But as a fan, as a passionate NBA fan for years and years and years, I made my way through most of that 113-page document today, Jay, and with all of the different kinds of precautions and all kinds of different crazy protocols and all this stuff, not to mention the fact that everybody is located, you know, in one place for a couple of different months, I just, you know, I say to myself, if I'm the NBA, I know that the television money is out there that you talk about, but, You know, no fans are going to be in the stands. The season could be disrupted at a moment's notice, as you say, because people are still taking this coronavirus thing as seriously as they are. I just say to myself, Jay, is it really worth it? You know, look, it is now June the 17th. We've been out of action since, what was it, March 11th we were on the air when in Oklahoma City the Jazz and the Thunder game was canceled. Yeah. So since March 11th, and now it's June 17th. I mean, it's just not worth the trouble, the time, the sacrifices that need to be made. Just close the thing up, say we'll see you next year at some point, and that's the way to go about it. Not with this bizarre twilight. They might as well take these games and play them on the fucking moon, Jay.
Well, because Adam Silver has a lot of owners, excuse me, in his ear, and they want that money back. And as I told you last week, some of these guys are hurting. And you might not think Mark Cuban is hurting, and he's not, and I don't think James Dolan is hurting, and I don't think Peter Guber and Joe Lacob are hurting. But some of these owners, like Fertitta in Houston, he has lost his ass in the restaurant industry in recent months. And I think some of these guys are saying, Adam, I might have to sell my team if you don't do something here. So I think Silver is very concerned about the future. As I said, he's dealing with a possible 40% the losses next year in home arenas, and then the CBA is torn up, and then next thing you know, the players, there will be a lockout, and then NBA has the same issues as as Major League Baseball. So I'm with you. I don't think they should play. I think Adam Silver and this league has much more to lose by trying to play and then going home. That would be the all-time Mickey Mouse disaster in professional sports to actually try this. And what if somebody gets sick? What if you have a family member in this bubble get sick? And what if you have an outbreak? I mean, it seems as if they have put that on the back burner in the name of trying to squeeze in a postseason. For what reason? It's a truncated postseason. You won't have any fans in the stands. It'll be very bizarre. You're going to be looking at a summer league type of background when you're watching these games on TV. I don't care how creative ESPN and Turner are, you're not going to be able to create any sort of excitement. It's not going to seem like the playoffs. So again, why? And we have so many potential issues. This whole idea is fraught with problems, and yet they're pushing through anyway. You have the coaches threatening a lawsuit because Mike D'Antoni, who is over 65, and Alvin Gentry, 65. They're saying that the league might cast them aside, that there's an ageism lawsuit here. So there's another problem on top of all these other ones. Yeah, what is the point? And do you know what's going to happen is Adam Silver's going to bring everybody down because of Black Lives Matter. Some of these guys will not come. Next thing you know, you're going to have to decide after the initial tests are taken how many players actually can play in this so-called season. And then you're going to look at it and say, this isn't even a representative season. Why would we do this if the Phoenix Suns could squeeze through with a healthy roster and win the NBA title? No, it's bastardized. That's my word for all of sports right now. And there's really no sense at all in even moving on with this.
Well, I think I did read something before the show tonight, Jay, where Adam Silver has walked back that thing about the ageism with the coaches, and he's going to let the coaches be on the benches and be a part of this whole thing. But you did raise the point of something I was going to follow up with in terms of the legal consequences or the legal ramifications. I mean, are all the players and the coaches and the staff, are they going to have to sign waivers before they start this whole thing, that they're held harmless, the league, the players, I mean, the league, the teams, are held harmless in the event somebody gets sick? Maybe not necessarily a player, but okay, a player, and then perhaps a wife or a child or whatever. I mean, what do we do then?
Well, that's what I think is going on right now, and everybody's been ripping Kyrie Irving for coming out because it's obviously racially motivated, what he is saying. But the bigger issue here, I think, is health. Certainly, Black Lives Matter, that element is something else that is obviously in play here, and you have many players thinking about that. They don't want the playing of basketball games to impact the enormity of Black Lives Matter and what's going on in the country. Personally, I don't agree with that. I think going down and playing in this bubble might actually help the cause of Black Lives Matter. But more importantly than that is keeping everybody healthy. I have no idea why they're even allowing families to come down after the first round of the postseason. Apparently, each player is going to be allowed to rent a room in the same hotel so his family could be there. Well, you're just asking for trouble. That's a bunch more people who have to test. And by the way, they're not testing every day. They're saying they're testing on a regular basis. What does that mean? And then furthermore, if somebody on a team tests positive, the games will go on. They will not test the other players on the team immediately or on the opposing team in that most recent game. Dino, we had how many players test positive? At least 10. Three in one game. Michael Malone, the coach of the Nuggets, tested positive. How many players are going to report to the bubble and test positive immediately? I will hazard a guess of at least 10, at least double figures. And then what? How is he, Adam Silver, going to announce this to the world? Well, we had 10 positive tests, but we're looking forward to our season. You got to send everybody home at that point.
It's 19 minutes after the hour. The great Jay Mariotti with another appearance on a Wednesday here on the Dino Costa Show. Questions, comments, concerns for Jay, you know where to send them. TalkToDino@gmail.com. That's TalkToDino@gmail.com. Now, this thing has not been thought through as well as it should be. It's cooler heads should have prevailed here. More common sense should have been introduced, and they should have canceled the same thing with the NHL. Same thing. Cancel the seasons. Come back when you can. You know, several months down the road when hopefully it's a better environment out there. But the other thing is, you mentioned, I mean, I think it's a great analogy. You know, what's it going to sound like? You know, coming out of the television, watching games on ESPN and Turner and wherever else. I mean, it's, you know, you mentioned a summer league in Vegas. I mean, that's basically, essentially, it's probably going to sound even worse than that, though, because there's going to be nobody there except for the players and the staff. And speaking of that, playing before no spectators, Jay, I mentioned to you that there's one sport I thought, and this was weeks ago during our conversation. I said, listen, I think they can get back on golf courses. The PGA Tour can resume. And all that other stuff. Well, I watched a lot of the tournament over the weekend. I don't know if you did, but it was bizarre, man. So I said they could do it without spectators on a golf course, even without fans in attendance at that golf tournament. I mean, it was weird, man. It was, you know, I felt like I was watching a practice round for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, I saw it, and I think right now fans, give yourself some props. I think sometimes fans just think they're not an important part of the equation. I think fans now should be realizing how very important and critical you are to every sports event. You provide the energy. You provide the backdrop. Even LeBron said it. I need fans here. I need opposing fans to boo me. I need my own fans to cheer me. These guys are egomaniacs. They feed off of that. And so we're going to actually hold a postseason. When I think of NBA postseason games, Dino, I think of crowds jammed into rather intimate arenas, very loud, like the old Oracle Arena in Oakland, where I spent some time, and not even being able to talk to the person next to me. So in our zeal to resume sports, I think fans are going to slowly realize, whether it's a golf tournament last weekend or if and when we ever start baseball, to these basketball games, you're going to realize, damn, this seems like it's a hollow experience. It needs some noise and energy. The announcers are not going to be on site. Mike Breen, Van Gundy, Mark Jackson are going to be in a studio somewhere. So they won't be able to capture that.
Right.
You're not going to have LeBron walking over to Mark Jackson and having a discussion. Those three guys are always part of it. Same with the Turner crew. That's not going to happen now. So I just think about how weird and plastic and artificial this is all going to seem, and it's all predicated on money. And the more this goes on, and the more players test positive or set home, or this team falls out of the race or loses a series because somebody tested positive, everybody in America is going to go, what the hell are we watching here? This is wacko. It's the apocalypse, and maybe I just don't enjoy this. I think that's what we're headed for.
I think so. I think so. As much as people want to see it come back under any circumstance and condition, I think that the end result is going to be, man, this is more underwhelming than I first gave credit to. I think the word that you used that sums it up as best as possible is artificial. You know, it's going to be an artificial, manufactured sort of an environment, and it's just not going to play well. The juice, the visceral reactions, the crowd, as you mentioned, I mentioned, it's just not going to be a part of it. So, anyway, I hope...
And are these guys going to be honest about positive tests? All right, so say we have a superstar have a positive test.
Yeah.
And the NBA, which I should give Adam Silver credit, he's always been transparent. I do trust him, certainly more than these MLB buffoons who do nothing but lie. But think about this, Dino. With so much at stake, billion plus, ESPN needs its ratings. What if a superstar gets the test? That's a gigantic story around the world. If a certain NBA star tests positive, am I going to trust this league to be transparent? Because the minute you announce that, you're going to have hysteria. All hell will break loose. There will be calls to, you know, shut down the league. You're going to have Fauci showing up. All of this will be swirling. It'll be the biggest story in the world. How do I know the NBA is going to be honest about that? It's in their best interests to keep it quiet.
I don't think they will.
Is out with a sprained ankle. He'll be back in 14 days.
Yeah.
That's another reason I don't trust this. I hope fans, again, maybe you had a caller or a letter writer last week, and I've been thinking about this, who said, Jay, maybe we don't miss sports as much as you think we do. But maybe given the time we've had without sports and the more that people realize what they're about to watch, maybe fans are going to just shut it right down, and then all of these league commissioners and owners and TV executives are going to have a hell of a lot to think about in the future about where sports and America is going.
All right, let's turn the page on the NBA. We'll get to the Major League Baseball here before we're through, but let me throw this at you. I don't know how you're going to react to it, but the president of this country, Donald Trump, made a very surprising comment earlier today. I don't know if you saw it, Jay, but he said
you did.
I can't either, man. He said now all of a sudden he's pandering. He seems to be pandering to Colin Kaepernick. He says, "Hey, I think Kaepernick deserves a second chance."
Well, he said if he's worth it, which, by the way, is what I've been saying all along, too. I mean, last week we talked for 10 minutes about my experience in 2015, his second to last season in San Francisco, was the most abysmal quarterbacking season I've ever seen, and I sat through some really bad ones in Chicago, the city of weak shoulders. This Colin Kaepernick experience in 15, Dino, one day in Arizona, he threw, I believe, four picks in the first quarter. I thought he was throwing the game. And week after week, this guy was so bad that I really started to wonder, why was he in the league? Blaine Gabbert replaced him. Blaine Gabbert benched. Colin Kaepernick benched. So when Trump says this, yes, if this guy 5 years later is worthy of a gig in the National Football League and is not going to demand some insane amount of money as he did when the, remember that Alliance of American Football, which is now defunct?
Mm-hmm.
He demanded $20 million a year. That's the story nobody talks about. This guy wants a ton of money to be a backup somewhere?
Yeah.
I want Cam Newton if I'm a team right now in need of a quarterback. I don't want Colin Kaepernick.
Of course.
He is rusty. He hasn't played in a long time. I don't know where his head is. I don't know where his body is. And I don't need to remind anybody that just last November, the NFL set up a tryout for all 32 teams. And yeah, it was rather abrupt and a little weird, but unprecedented. The NFL doesn't do this very often, if at all. And sure enough, Colin Kaepernick got pissed off. He wanted to call the shots. He told all the scouts to go to a high school field an hour away, and only eight showed up, and then he cussed out the NFL. Does this sound like a man who wants a job in the NFL?
No, and that's a civil rights martyr, Jay.
And so why Trump is doing this, this is one of the things Trump has been right on. I don't know why he comes out today, other than he's very fearful he's going to lose an election.
No, he does. I've been saying for weeks, if not for years, that he doesn't want to play. He's making too much money not getting beat up as a political activist. He's got the deal with Nike. He doesn't want to be a backup. He wants too much money. The whole thing, that boondoggle with the tryout that you mentioned in Atlanta. No, every indication that the Colin Kaepernick has shown to me is that he doesn't want to play. Now, I want to ask you something. Do you remember last week we got on this kick about golf? We talked about golf for about a 20-25 minute stretch on the show last week. You remember that, right?
Tennis.
Then it worked into tennis, right? Tennis and golf. And then I asked you, I said, Jay, I said, you know, tennis, golf. I said, I don't know why I mentioned fishing. I think you might have mentioned something. And I said, Jay, by the way, Jay, just out of curiosity, have you ever been fishing? You like fishing? And you told the story of how, you know, back in the college days, what happened down on that boat in Florida. You remember that?
Yeah.
All right.
The Miami Herald Fishing Award.
Well, unbeknownst to me, and unbeknownst to you, obviously, do you know who listens to this show?
Michael Jordan.
Maybe. I don't know. No. Someone much more nearer and dearer to you, I think. If I gave you the name John Siragusa, does that ring a bell?
John Siragusa was the man on that boat.
Yes, he was.
Wow.
And John Siragusa... And John Siragusa was listening to our conversation last week. And, yeah, small world, right?
What a great story.
And he sends me this email. You ready? Hi, Dino. It's from John Siragusa. Please tell Jay the next time he's on your show that his Ohio U fishing buddy, Goose, from that Florida Keys trip in 1980, sends his best. I happen to be listening to your show, as I do most Wednesdays when Jay is on. His story brought back great memories. That was a heck of a day on the water, and I seem to remember his fish was over 100 times, 100 pounds. A big tarpon for sure.
It was a tarpon.
Right. Tell Jay the next time.
I have never fished in my life.
Tell Jay the...
That's an unbelievable story. It's like
he's not done. Jay's not done. He's not done.
From the past with Dino Acosta.
Yes.
Goose, we called him.
Goose. Goose listens to the show.
And he introduced me to fishing.
And then he says...
sure enough, I told you last week, I get this big bite on the fishing pole. I go, I'm not doing this. There's no chance I bring this in. The tour guide agreed with me. But John said, you're catching the fish. So about 20 minutes later, I caught the fish.
And he says...
Again, I suffered because I...
Yeah, get sunburned
the
right
of the trip. But that's an amazing story. You're gonna have to give me his information.
I will. I'll send you his email. And he also says, tell Jay the next time he comes to Florida, we can try again for a bigger one, but he needs to leave his shirt on and I'll bring the beer.
For more reasons than one, believe
me. So how about that? Your old college buddy Goose listening to the show last week.
That's true. See, you have quite a listenership, man. I've been telling you.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right, from Kaepernick, is there anything in the sports media we want to talk about? Any shoes that dropped? Any interesting things that happened over the last week that caught your eye?
Just what's happening at newspapers. I'm frightened because there are uprisings at newspapers among African-American reporters who aren't happy with the way that newspapers are covering the stories. And in particular in Pittsburgh... There was one reporter who made a crack on her Twitter feed about being at a Kenny Chesney concert, and it didn't go over well with the editor, who rightfully said, "Look, if you're going to be making these cracks on Twitter, and throw race out of it, you know, this should be a rule at any newspaper. If you're going to impugn the integrity of a newspaper and the professionalism of a newspaper by wisecracking about serious issues, no matter what that serious issue is, I would have heard about it from an editor. Anybody would have heard about it. But she is now suing the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And, of course, everybody wants the editor fired. You know, I'm sure you talk about this topic every night on your show. You and I usually do sports, but you asked me. That's the predominant story in media right now. It's happening at the LA Times. It's happening at the Philadelphia Inquirer, where a longtime editor who put approved a headline on the front page, Buildings Matter,
yeah,
because
I saw
buildings
that, yeah,
were being wrecked in the protests in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. That editor was forced out under pressure. That man had a 40-year career in newspapers, and he didn't even write the headline. Somebody else did, but because he's the editor in the chief, he loses his career over that. you and I talked about Grant Napier a couple of weeks ago. I haven't heard a word from Grant other than the fact that I think he's going to sue and probably win because the company that fired him was NBC California. Well, Drew Brees is soon to be employed by NBC. So if I'm Grant Napier's lawyer, I'm certainly going to bring in the Drew Brees argument. How do you keep him and fire him when these comments they made were probably on similar ground? So, yeah, I'd say in sports media, there's not much happening right now. But in the media in general, newspapers continue to fall apart, and these sort of uprisings are not going to help the future of newspapers.
ESPN had their newest 30 for 30 over the weekend. I'm sure that you took it in. It was
dreadful.
Okay, wait a second.
Did you watch it?
Yes, I watched it. Wait a second. Hold on, though. Before you get on to how it was dreadful, I watched it. Since that time, Sosa, just like when Jordan, you know, when we had The Last Dance and Jordan took some hits from a number of people after it aired, the same thing has been going on. Maybe not quite to the extent that Jordan took some hits, but, you know, there's been some players that have come out and said that when they played with Sosa, they found him to be very self-centered and very ego-driven and all about himself. And okay, now tell me why it was dreadful. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we both viewed The Last Dance fondly. I mean, there were problems
for the most part,
certain aspects of it, but I think you and I agree it was a fabulous production.
Yeah.
This was not.
Okay.
This was done by a Cardinal fan who grew up in Edwardsville, Illinois, and it came off like a guy who was a fanboy. And you didn't even get to until the last 10 minutes, you didn't even get to the fact that both of them were PED abusers. It was all we saw was this long string of home run shots. It was like, come on, enough. I need to know more about both of them. And I'm surprised ESPN approved it. They must be really desperate. Because this thing is one of the worst 30 for 30s I've seen. These are usually very compelling documentaries done by top filmmakers. I don't know who this guy was. They should not have approved it. I lived through that. I had a hell of a 1998, Dino. I go from the Michael Jordan in Utah to Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire without even catching a breath. It was one constant plane ride. It was fun. It was the time of my life. It was great. But, yes, look, the story, the central story, was that this event that brought baseball back, quote-unquote, was a fraud. And yet the way it was presented, they waited for the final 10 minutes, they tried in Bob Costas to be the bad guy, and then it ended. And it just fell flat on its face. Very disappointing. I thought the Lance Armstrong doc was pretty good. Obviously, The Last Dance was an all-timer. This thing, I have no idea why that got on the air.
So there was really nothing you took out of it that you came away and you said, well, that was interesting.
No, and I lived that. And Sosa, there was one part where Sammy, who has never come clean,
yeah,
he did say, hey, if everybody else was doing it also, what's the big deal? And, oh, you're finally coming clean. But he really didn't. We're way past that. We're 22 years later. Sosa is not going to the Hall of Fame. McGwire is not going to the Hall of Fame. I think what we're waiting for is Tom Ricketts, the owner of the Cubs, to bring Sammy back and let him have his day. The Giants have done that for Bonds. The Cardinals have done it for McGwire. McGwire is in the Cardinal Hall of Fame. Bonds, I still believe, works for the Giants in some capacity. Sammy has been blocked by Ricketts, who oddly didn't even own the team at the time.
Right.
And he has his own skeletons, Ricketts and the whole Ricketts family. And yet he's playing hardball with Sosa. Why not just bring the guy back, let the fans cheer, some will boo, cheer, let him do his kiss thing, and then that'll be it. There needs to be finality, because having been in Chicago for that period of time, I realize how important he was to the whole Cup thing, and even though it did get dirty at the end, he was still a guy who brought a lot of joy there. And, you know, those kisses he blew and the enthusiasm he showed, that had nothing to do with steroids. Those kisses were not juiced. That grin was not juiced. That was him. He had a hell of a lot of fun playing baseball. It's a damn shame he was as dirty as everybody else. But the reason people loved him should be celebrated. Yeah, we don't have to like the steroids. Nobody does, or the corked bat, if you recall.
I do.
But Sammy Sosa's joy was infectious. It was fun to watch.
Well, and knowing that you were there in the middle of that, you mentioned the Jordan thing and then on into the Sosa thing, and for as much as Sammy was beloved in Chicago, and particularly on the north side, Jay, When you talk about resonance within the sporting world in terms of, you know, comparing him with Jordan, I mean, there was really no comparison, right? I mean, as much as Sammy was a big deal.
It was getting pretty close, Dino.
You think so?
I tell a lot of people the story and they're blown away. You know, where does the Jordan story rank in the history of Chicago sports? And I tell people, third. And I go, third? I go, yeah, the 85 Bears would still be number one.
I agree.
On that list.
I agree.
Because Chicago was never a basketball town before Jordan got there, and still isn't, by the way. It's always been a football town. Football unites the city. You know, it's such a divided city, including baseball, Cubs and White Sox. You know, and then the Cubs winning finally in 2016 has to be the number two story because it finally happened. The event you never thought would take place. And oddly enough, Michael Jordan is probably third on that list in Chicago. And that's why when you just asked me, you know, Sosa was not in the same stratosphere as Michael. For a time there, because Cub fans are Cub fans, and the Bulls were more of a upstart experience with Michael, I'm telling you, in Chicago, Sosa meant as much to Cub fans as Jordan did to the city of Chicago. I think that was the case.
We do have an email, Jay, from someone down, John in Hialeah, Florida, speaking of Florida, and he says he's a Chicago transplant now living down in Hialeah, Florida. I've always enjoyed Jay's work. He says he wants to talk about sports media. He says, I want Jay's honest reflections on someone by the name of Bill Simmons. Go ahead.
Bill Simmons probably personifies what is wrong with today's sports media. Bill came up through the ranks, Dino, as a fanboy.
Bartender.
Yeah. Fanboy, yeah. A blogger. And Bill never took a class in his life. And I think it's important to take certain journalism classes to realize what is professional and what isn't, to realize what is ethical and what isn't. And some of Simmons' major mistakes have been in not understanding journalism ethics, the basics. You can't call Roger Goodell a liar. You can say Roger Goodell lied in this case, but if you call somebody a liar, a stone-faced liar, you're making yourself vulnerable to a lawsuit. And that's why he got in trouble at ESPN, because Simmons never seemed to think that the rules of the law applied to him. When he was running a, what was that called, Grantland, the website they set up. Now, by the way, he knows how to hire good people. He hires good young writers. That's not the point. But he outed a transgender person in a story. And anybody who had any sensitivity at the time in the print media or in media in general would know the problem with doing that as an editor. He didn't understand what happened, and then he ends up apologizing in a 6,000-word screed. It's just the guy was never trained. He was a byproduct of ESPN when they were just starting their website, when they had a device called Page 2. They had Hunter Thompson writing for it. It was kind of a gonzo experiment. It was working. They had different people. I have no problems with different writers having different strokes. But Simmons just never, I think, he always captured the voice of the fan, and that's great. But my problem is, I think he could have been even better if he had just known a little bit about the industry instead of coming off as this crazed fanboy who loves all the Boston teams and hates everything in New York. It's just too fannish. And, Dino, you love sports, but you have elements of a good journalist. Bill Simmons doesn't understand what the elements of journalism are, so he asked me a question, and I'm telling you, he has made some major mistakes in his career because he just doesn't get it. He needed to take some classes.
I mean, if I can throw my two cents in, I've never been a fan of the guy. I think he's a smart-alecky, wise-ass. I give him credit, Jay. I've always said that the best book that I've ever read on the NBA was The Book of Basketball, which came out years and years ago. And that's when I was first starting off with SiriusXM. And at that time, before I moved back to New York, I was doing the show out of a home studio in Denver. And Bill had come down to a bookstore in Denver where he was doing a book signing for the aforementioned Book of Basketball. And I waited all day for him, and he finally came in, and I, you know, told him who I was, and I said, listen, I've been pimping your book for a while. I've been on the air for about 2 months at SiriusXM. I'd love to have a long-form conversation with you about the book. I think it's a great piece. And he told me yes, and it, you know, it gave me the number and everything, and we could never get in touch with him. And I didn't have a high opinion of him even before I went to see him, but I thought he would be a terrific guest to talk about that book at the time. But he's just, I, you know, from what I've heard with other people, he's just not a good guy. He puts on airs. He big leagues people. He's, you know, he's got his nose up in the air, thinks his shit doesn't stink. So that's my own personal, if I can answer.
Well, he knows basketball. That's
very well. Very well.
Because anybody who knows and loves and lives a certain topic, the book is going to be good. I don't care about his journalistic training. And you could tell in that book his love for the game shone through. That's great. Good. And when it comes to these guys and they're being uppity or whatever, you know, most of the business is that way. I mean, I learned that a long time ago. You just, God, you know, if you took these egos seriously in this business, you'd be wasting a lot of your life worrying about bullshit that doesn't matter. Yes, the sports media filled with egomaniacs, megalomaniacs, yes, but whatever, you have to be your own man. He had major success. He was propped up at ESPN by John Walsh and John Skipper, who decided they needed to appeal to younger people. Get it. I understand.
Yeah.
You don't want, you know, I've been accused of being, you're one of those old, crusty sports writers. I never thought anybody would say that, but I guess if you look at my age, I am. Yes, sports writers tend to start in their 20s and then their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Simmons was the anti-crusty sports writer. Good. I think he created something there. My point is, he wouldn't have had these episodes in his career, including one that got him fired at ESPN, if he had just had some brains in his head about protocol in the industry. So, you know, I don't know what happened to him now. He ended up selling, didn't he sell The Ringer to a bigger outfit or his podcasting business?
Yeah.
I think you've probably seen the last of Simmons as a major sports voice. He's probably made too much money to care anymore, and that's fine. But a lot of us aren't in it to make millions of dollars. I have been very fortunate to make a lot of money in my career, but I'm not in it to buy a mansion in Malibu. I'm here to, you know, talk to you about what's going on in the world today.
You know, well, when I say I don't like the guy, I mean, for me, Jay, when I look at people, I get down to a bottom line question sometimes, and I say to myself, would I enjoy going into a tavern, sitting down and having a beer with that guy? You know, now Simmons, I would have no interest in going and having a beer with. Chris Russo, I'd have no interest in going and having a. Well, first of all, Russo doesn't even drink beer, but you, as another example, as much as we think about things along different lines politically, sports issues sometimes, I like you. You're a guy that interests me. I find you fascinating on a few levels. I'd love to have a beer with Jay Mariotti. So that's the way I kind of think of it. Now, you mentioned something before about the fans and how they think about writers or columnists or talk show hosts or play-by-play guys. And some guys like to engage their fans, people that read them, listen to them, whatever. How have you always viewed that? I mean, have you enjoyed interaction with people who would read you regularly, that would have something to say, would enjoy saying, you know who I ran into today? I ran into Jay Mariotti today. Let's say we wind the clock back several years. You're in Chicago. You're lording over the Chicago sports writing establishment then. And a guy says, you know, hey, I met Jay Mariotti today. He was nice enough to sit down and or at least give me a few minutes of his time. I mean, were you like that? Did you like engaging your audience?
I liked it when I was doing national stuff because you weren't, quote-unquote, representing a city. And that's tough. I started as a columnist in Cincinnati and then Denver and then Chicago. Well, these are pretty parochial places that are diving headfirst into sports. They derive a lot of their identity from sports and... That's tough to engage because in those cities, because I'm an honest guy, and a lot of sports writers don't have the balls to be, I tend to automatically tilt toward you're the bad guy, even though I'm not. And yeah, you got to watch your ass. I mean, I remember, I mean, I'd have my favorite bar in Chicago and go have beer after a game or something. I literally would have to watch what the hell might happen. I've had bartenders, you know, leap over and throw guys out by the neck because they wanted to fight me. And that was Chicago. These people are so crazy about sports that I became public enemy number one. However, once I started doing Around the Horn on ESPN, you run into somebody in an airport, and suddenly you're not connected to that city. And it's, oh, love you on that show. You're great in the show. And you're detached from that Chicago thing or that Denver thing or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was refreshing because then you could have a conversation with somebody about sports. No, in Chicago it was always, how come you're always down on the Cubs? My dad took me to Wrigley Field when I was 12. And I said, great, I'm glad your dad took you. What's it have to do with my article on why the Cubs suck this year? What, would you explain to me why that has anything to do with it? Answer, these fans in cities like that tend to view their sports teams as their kids, heirlooms, generational artifacts, and they don't want some guy telling you their team sucks. They want to do that. They don't want the sports writer doing that.
Well, you make me think about a few other things. I mean, you look at some cities in this country, Jay, if an outsider arrives in that city, it can be more difficult, depending upon the city, to be accepted and embraced. You mentioned Chicago, and I think that Chicago is one of the more, to use your word, parochial, or I'll use another word, clannish type cities, where if you're in the media there, the people prefer that you're from there, you have roots there, you grew up there. I think Boston fits that criteria somewhat. I think St. Louis might fit that criteria a little bit as well. But did you find any resistance from people who said that, well, I don't like Mariotti because he's not from Chicago?
When I got there, I was 30. The National Sports Daily just folded. I interviewed there. They hired me. And then they immediately started a campaign, Sports with an Attitude, that had this dripping graffiti coming from any number of huge billboards throughout the area, including one next to Wrigley Field above the 7-Eleven, including one by Soldier Field, with my big mugshot, Sports with an Attitude. I went, what the hell are these people doing to me? I have two strikes against me before I even walk into this town. So nobody knew who I was. They may have heard a faint name somewhere, but 30 years old, I had never worked in that city. And yes, you're right, sports writers, sports media, yeah, you got to be from here or you aren't shit. So I come there, I have every eye in this town on me. And I mean, it was fun in one sense, but in the other, you're immediately the enemy, and I haven't written a single word.
Yeah.
The late Chet Kopic had me on his show. And he said, well, pal, how the hell are you going to win the Pulitzer Prize? Because you'd better. And I went, oh, shit. I mean, this was an out-of-control ad campaign intended to put pressure on the other paper, the Tribune. But it didn't really make a lot of sense to me. They should have waited for a year. Instead, before I'm even in town, the billboards are up. So to answer your question, you're feeling quite a bit of pressure. You're not a... Nobody's really liking you in that press box, but that's not why I do this. In a way, it challenged me to be as good as I could, and I think you catch fire early there, because what's happening when I get there? The Bulls are starting year two of the dynasty, and Mike Ditka's going down the drain in a flash fire, and Frank Thomas in a new ballpark in the South Side. All of this is happening when I get to town. The Blackhawks are going to the Stanley Cup Finals with Jeremy Roenick and Chris Chelios. I mean, all this is going on. I have all this food on my plate. It was a wonderful experience, but yeah, you're suddenly the job everybody wanted. Every sports writer in that town wanted the job I had.
Right.
They wanted to be up in that billboard. Who is this clown? Where did he come from?
Right. No, I get it. Yeah. Yeah. Listen. Just we got to move along here and quick, because I got another guest coming up top of the hour, and I want to get your thoughts on this most recent baseball proposal that is out there. But since you entered the newspaper industry as a writer, Jay, have you always been a columnist? Were you ever on a beat anywhere?
Yeah, when I got out of college, the Detroit News put me on the Pistons.
Oh, no kidding!
Isaiah
really?
Thomas, Bill Lambeer, the early years. Very, very early. Yeah.
Did you enjoy that?
That was getting started.
Did you enjoy that?
No, because it was difficult dealing with Isaiah, because he was the kind of guy who would give you little wink, wink stories, but then you were beholden to him. And I'm not made that way. I'd be a terrible beat writer because I don't cut deals with the guys I'm covering.
Yeah.
And he wanted you to cut a deal. I remember he gave me an early story, and I ran. He hated the coach at the time. It was before Chuck Daly. And I ran with it, and then he thought I had to be in his back pocket for life. Well, no, if you have 8 turnovers, I'm going to write it, you know? And no, early on, the Pistons had taken off an older beat writer, and they tried to take my press credential away. It became a big story in Detroit. The NBA got involved and reissued my press credential.
Yeah, but why?
But that beat was not going to work out. They put the older guy back on the next year. Nobody read him, and then the Pistons wanted me back on the beat. I learned early on, don't cover a beat. That's not
real quick. Why'd they want to take your press credential away?
Because they wanted the veteran guy back who kissed everybody's ass.
Oh, I see.
He's like, you know, man in his 50s that covered the franchise for years.
Yeah.
And obviously, the Detroit News wanted a younger guy covering this up-and-coming sport, the NBA. I did not realize that this older guy was so entrenched with the owner and all these people that they didn't want me around. So, no, I was the worst beat writer in the history of the business because I could not play those games that you had to play every night with everybody in that locker room, the coach, the owner, the GM. Hell, Jack McCloskey, the GM, cornered me one night and wanted to kick my ass. Dick Vitale, who had been fired by the Pistons as their coach, was leaking stories to me on my voicemail at home. It was a typical Mariotti shit show. From day one, I had to deal with this, and I realized early on, don't ever cover another beat again the rest of your life, and I didn't.
All right, interesting. All right, real quick here, we got the baseball. Now, you had Manfred last week saying, hey, I guarantee we're going to have a season this year. This week, I don't know if we're going to have a season this year, right? And so now today, new Major League Baseball proposal, 60 games in 70 days, season starting July 19th or 20th, Jay. Full prorated salaries for the players, expanded playoffs in 2020 and 2021, and they want the players to waive any potential grievance that they might have ideas about that.
Well, you just mentioned it. Want the players to waive any potential grievance, and the union has already shot that down because the union wants that grievance in its back pocket. And that's what this is all about. It's all for show, Dino. This is not some breakthrough. It's all for show, and it's an attempt by Rob Manfred to get the media off his ass, and it's an attempt by the owners to put the onus back on the players so that if this doesn't happen, then everybody's going to turn, oh, it's the players' fault now. It's all BS. Just go away. The key number here is 8. 8. That's the number of Major League Baseball owners who reportedly do not want to go on with the season. And if you have 8 no votes, that's enough to block a season. I think we've seen Bill DeWitt come out. We've seen Ricketts come out. You know Reinsdorf is back there. 8. If 8 owners oppose a deal, Dino, we're not going to have a season. I'm starting to think the owners don't even want a season. This was just lip service today.
Well, you might be right. They probably stand to lose. They're going to lose their ass no matter what. But it's a question of will they lose more of their ass playing or not playing? And I tend to believe that they'll lose less of their ass by not playing.
Yeah, it's a PR stunt, and that's all. These you think suddenly after years of being the Hatfields and the McCoys that they suddenly got along one night in Phoenix when Manfred flies down to see Tony Clark? Rob Manfred was not used to getting shellacked by the media. I read at least 10 columns killing the owners, which is highly unusual. And I think the owners said, Rob, get your ass down to Phoenix and try to twist this around. But no, they're not headed to any sort of deal. I don't think we're going to have a season.
All right, Mariotti, no matter what anyone says about you, I'm in your corner. I get your back. I'm in a foxhole with you. I think you're a swell guy. Don't listen to those people. I don't listen to them myself, so I don't want you to listen to them. So
I stopped listening a long time. You got to tell the truth, man.
And how about the goose?
It's just sports, folks.
Give the goose another shout-out, man, because he might have been listening tonight.
Yeah, shoot him my email.
I will do that.
His email.
Jay, you have a great week. Great weekend.
Yeah, give me a call, man.
Thanks, brother. Well,